You're listening to Trek FM.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
People needed someone that didn't require a warrant or shield to get things done. Call it a vigilante or a superhero. Call it what you will, but like it or not, I finally accepted that that someone had to be me.
Maybe I could have helped you.
This burden is bigger than you or me. People are scared, but they can't be paralyzed by that fear. You have to fight for what's right every single day, bulletproof skin or not. You can't just not snitch or turn away or take money under the table because life has turned you sour. When did people stop caring? Harlem is supposed to represent our hopes and dreams. It's the pinnacle of black art, politics, innovation. It's supposed to be a shining light to the world. It's our responsibility to push forward so that the next generation will be further along than us. Pop said his mantra aloud twice a day. The kids in the shop were pissed, but they could never unhear it. Never backwards.
Always forward.
Welcome, everyone, to a special supplemental episode of the 602 Club. I'm so excited to be here. And honestly, it feels like a Dragon Con reunion show because I've got two wonderful gentlemen here from Dragon Con, brothers from another mother, brothers from down south too. So I'm feeling at home. So you might hear a lot of y'alls on this show. So just get used to it. But of course, all of you know the wonderful, the talented, the amazing Bruce Gibson.
How y'all doing? I never say
doing
y'all.
Great, Bruce.
I never say y'all. I'm not originally from
really?
The South. My wife
That's
says
true.
It all the time. It drives me crazy, actually. But
what do you
this
mean?
Time,
y'all
I gave
is
it
such
to
a. I mean, it's better than you guys. I mean, y'all is at least gender inclusive.
No, it's all of you. All of you. That's what you say. Hello, all of you.
Why don't you just say how do y'all?
Everyone.
I mean, yeah.
How do
and,
you y'all?
Well, and Bruce, we have a brand new fun member of the 602 Club. Welcome for the very first time, the incredible, the incomparable Michael Morris.
Sup?
Nice. Yeah, there you go. Getting into the spirit of this 602 Club, which is deep in the heart of Harlem. So we are going to be talking about some Luke Cage. Very excited to be talking about this. I'm going to say right up front, I enjoyed Luke Cage. Before we dive in fully, just want to remind everybody, of course, that the 602 Club is part of the Trek FM network, and you can find that all over the place. The best place is iTunes, itunes.com/TrekFM. We're a featured provider there. And while you're there, please hit us up with a star rating and review. Help the 602 Club grow, help more people find it. And I also just appreciate hearing your thoughts on the show there. And give us a rating and a star review. We'll mention you in the show and thank you personally. So thank you so much to all who have already done that. You can also find us on Twitter at Trek FM, Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. We have our listeners-only discussion group. That's the Babel Conference. You can find that on Facebook, of course. Just type Babel into the search field there and we can let you into the group. And if you would like to send us some emails, I'd love to hear what you thought of Luke Cage and looking maybe to do a mailbag episode, which would be fun. Send that over to trek.fm/contact, choose the show, choose the 602 Club, and that will come straight to me. So guys, diving right into Hell's Kitchen to Harlem, it's been interesting because we've been starting this slow run-up to what we're going to get as the Defenders series. We've had Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Daredevil Season 2, and now Luke Cage, who was featured in Jessica Jones for quite a few episodes, and so just wanted to know if you guys had any history with the character before that, or if you'd read the comics, or what did you know about Luke Cage before coming in. What about you, Bruce?
Well, my history with Luke Cage is we used to go out and do Chinese quite often, usually on a Thursday night. No, of course not. I don't really have a history with Luke Cage. I mean, I was familiar that there was a character named Luke Cage in the Marvel comics. Years ago, when I was a kid, I used to get the Defenders comics for a little while, and he was in a few issues of that. But outside of that, that was it, because I've watched some of Daredevil, haven't finished watching all of them. I haven't watched any of Jessica Jones, so it's interesting that you mentioned that he's in that, because, of course, I would have been introduced to his character in that manner. So when I go back and watch those, it'll be pretty cool to see him. So I'm coming in this fresh and new, as if, you know, this is a new series that was created for television and didn't come from the comics, unlike some people, I think, on the show who are familiar with Luke Cage.
Well, Bruce, that would not be me, because, you know, for me personally, I'm not as familiar with Marvel Comics as I am DC. And it's kind of fun in that way, though. I enjoy coming into these shows kind of fresh, not really knowing anything. And so I feel like in a lot of ways, the show can just stand on its own. I don't have a ton of expectations going into it. So that's also fun. I mean, anything DC, honestly, I have a lot more expectations. They have a lot more to live up to for me because I know the source material much better. And so it is fun to be able to do that. But Michael, I think you might be our resident expert on Luke Cage on the show.
Sweet Christmas. Yeah, I've kind of read different things with him in it throughout the years. One of my favorite runs ever was, let's see, it'd been back around 2005 when... It was after they basically did this whole thing called Avengers Disassembled, in which case Scarlet Witch went crazy and created this whole other world where there were no mutants anymore. And then once they got everything back together and all, they started the Avengers back up with the new Avengers, and Luke Cage actually led that that group. And that was the Avengers title there for a while. There wasn't a, you know, Earth's Mightiest Heroes or anything like that. It was just the new Avengers, and it was led by Luke Cage. So I'm pretty familiar with him, and I actually like Luke Cage a lot.
No, I actually have to say I love Luke Cage from what we got in the show. I think he is a very fun character. He's enjoyable. I love his corny sense of humor. The character as portrayed here I thought was very enjoyable to watch and made the season a joy to be a part of and continue watching each episode, because, you know, all of these shows are pretty dark on Netflix, which is fine with me. I enjoyed watching, I think, Cage be a nice supplement to the mopiness of Daredevil that you get, which, again, I don't have a problem with any of these, but he tends to be a little bit more mopey. Jessica Jones is very sarcastic, and Luke Cage is just kind of a normal guy, you know, and it's great. Were there any parts that you really noticed, Michael? Were there any storylines from Luke Cage that you had read that they pulled from, you felt like, or did this feel like they were just kind of really cherry picking?
Well, I think that they definitely went back to a lot of the roots with like Cottonmouth and Diamondback and stuff. But the thing that you have to keep in mind is that when Luke Cage started, it was back when blaxploitation was really big. So you can't really do things in quite the same way that they were done back then. But
for good reason.
Right, right. It was true to the characters, but also really evolved and gave a fresh story. So,
which I think, I mean, gosh, a great way, I think, to kind of move into one of the major themes here that I really like. And I think I will say right up front that Luke Cage does a fantastic job of being almost a balm to, and a balm, like you put on your lips, like a lip balm, that kind of balm, to a lot of the things that we've been seeing on television. And what I mean is the news going on in our country. And I think Luke Cage, the series, has a lot to say to all sides of those issues, which I thought was wonderful. And one of the things that was really interesting to me was the way that this show deals with manhood and like what it means to, and specifically, obviously, for this show, what it means to be a black man. And up front, obviously, there are no black men on the panel. There will be things here where I would love to hear from some listeners about what they thought. If you happen to be black, I think that would be fantastic. I would love to have a conversation with somebody about what they thought about the show. And maybe if you have a different experience, because I think there's a lot that I can pull from here, but I would love to see what people that are different from me thought. So for watching this show, I thought this was really fascinating, watching all of these different characters struggle with what manhood means. And specifically, you know, when we got Cottonmouth's backstory, and that really struck me with the way in which people taught him what it was like to be a man. I mean, because he wasn't going to be a killer. He wasn't going to be a part of the mob. This guy was going to be a jazz guy. I mean, he, and I would say he was so talented, he could have been, you know, the next like Miles Davis or something. And yet he's pulled into this whole world against his will and turned into something he doesn't want to be. And I thought that was a really fascinating storyline to watch in conjunction with that theme.
Yeah, I think that's why he turned out to be my favorite character of the series. I thought Cottonmouth's backstory, as you were saying, was quite interesting. I wasn't expecting to see that when I wasn't really expecting to see flashbacks, of course, to their childhood. So it was interesting the upbringing he had, and not just the influence his father had, but his mother, and just the whole dynamics of that family was so messed up. And it's, I felt some pity for him, because like you said, he could have been a great jazz musician, but he was almost brought up that that's not the way things go. That's not how you handle yourself. That's not how you're to be a man. And I thought the actor did a great job with him. I don't have daddy issues. My only daddy issues are like my dad embarrasses me in public. But so I can't relate to these characters or anything in that manner. But it's interesting how each of these men had family issues, and they've all handled it differently. And that's what's so great, because once we see Cottonmouth and then we get to Diamondback, it's a similar but different situation.
I can imagine you pass that on to those daddy issues to your kids, right, Bruce?
That's what they tell me all the time. I embarrass them in public. and on the show.
having spent some time with you, I have seen you embarrass your daughters in public, and it's yes. cute.
I embarrass my wife, too.
I can see that, too. It's funny that you said that, though, because Cottonmouth was probably my favorite character. It's hard to say, like, my favorite character. He's like, oh, I really like Cottonmouth, but it's like, but if I say he's my favorite, then I can't, I can't pick another character. So, but I did really, really like Cottonmouth. For this second right now, I'm going to say he's my favorite, but it may change in a moment. And I guess, I don't know if we're jumping into spoilers yet or not.
Yeah, I think that's a good time. We'll give a spoiler warning here. If you haven't seen all the show, you've been warned.
That was the one thing, is by the time that I'd been fully broken down by the show and said, you know what, I really like this guy, they're like, and he's out. I was like, what, really? Because you felt for him so much right there up at the end.
I think that was the thing that I loved, is like you were talking about, Bruce, he's being like pulled away from his music and basically told that's not what real men do. Real men don't create something beautiful. Real men kill and protect the family and run the family business. I mean, and how sad that is. And what I loved away is the way that all of these different men's stories kind of play off each other. And so, you know, you had Pops, who was somebody who was running in these gangs and you know, popping people in the mouth. That's how he got his name. And I love what he says, you know, what would have happened to me if someone had given up on me? Like, what would have happened to my life if somebody had just given up on me? And that idea of, like, that somebody stepped into his life and showed him a different way. And so what he does is then give these fatherless boys a safe place to encourage them to learn some respect for themselves and for others. And I love that he's having a conversation with Luke, and he says, you know, everybody has a gun. Nobody has a father. And this idea of how important male role models are for young boys to understand what it means to be a real man. And that each one of these guys has different role models in their lives telling them what it means to be a man, and that's kind of what they end up turning into. And you know, I really thought that was really interesting. And of course, you guys mentioned, you know, once you get to Stryker, talk about ultimate daddy issues. I mean, that's his main motivation is his daddy issues.
Yeah, I don't know. That one felt a little weak to me. It just didn't add up, because I mean, I understand that his father had an affair, and so he's like this, you know, treated like this bastard child. But at the same time, I mean, it sounds like his upbringing was pretty close to the church. He could quote the Bible. And I mean, I'm not to say he wouldn't have issues, but to go as far as he was and to take his revenge on his half-brother, I just didn't buy. I felt like it was going a little too far. It was a little too melodramatic for me.
Well, and yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing, because, you know, the actor who played Stryker said, you know, this was an interesting question. You know, if your whole childhood you realize that you're a bastard and everybody calls you one, basically, you're illegitimized and you're swept under the rug, and then you're thrown into the jail system and you kind of get tortured there. How do you not kind of come out twisted and warped and, you know? And so I thought that was an interesting way to put it. But at the same time, I remember when the revelation came that he was his brother, and I was like, really? That you're like, you're taking this out on your other brother who had nothing to do with you because of high school issues? Like, what happened back in like high school?
Well,
like,
and remember,
his
he
daddy
said
didn't
were,
love you as
they
much,
were really or? Close, that they were best yeah. friends.
So that does bother me a little bit. I think it gets a little bit better as the series progressed in the season. I was a little bit more comfortable with it by the time we got to the end. But if there's a weak point to the season, I think it's the motivation of Stryker. It is very, very melodramatic. So, and I don't know, this movie. Michael, what did you think?
Honestly, that part, yeah, I kind of agree. I liked part of it, but other parts were a little meh. At least it was a good excuse to kind of play son of a preacher man, I guess.
Yeah.
But... You know, it was fine, but it's not only is it something that we've kind of seen before, it's something we've seen before in Marvel movies, a la Thor, you know. It was a little too familiar, I think. Though I don't know. Now, the original backstory, unless something came out later that I didn't read or am not familiar with, they weren't actually brothers. They were just friends. And it was actually Reva that was sort of the thing. So they were more split up by, you know, because both of them wanted her. So I don't know that would necessarily be better. That's a little tropey too, I guess, but, it was fine for the most part. You know, just to be 100% honest, I think that, the Cottonmouth stuff was really where I was. And then, once he was out of the picture, Shades was the more interesting character.
Yes. Shades is my second favorite.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you guys. I think that for me, the villain that I liked the most was Cottonmouth. And then when you combined that with his cousin, Mariah, and Shades, I thought they were the most interesting villains. I thought Diamondback felt like kind of the over the top, you know, and again, melodramatic, and I mean, he's the guy, yeah, he's quoting the Bible all the time. Of course, he's quoting the Bible, and really he's pulling everything out of context. It just makes for great quotes, you know. So, I'm right there with you. But what was interesting for all the melodrama between Diamondback and Luke Cage, what was interesting is the way in which that portrayed the sins of the father getting passed down to the son, and the way that perpetuates in society, and continuing that idea of manhood, and that these young boys, it's almost as if they are predestined to be the way that they are, because nobody's there for them. You know, nobody's there to really teach them. And even if they are predisposed, like Cottonmouth, to be different, they kind of get beat into submission to be who the society is telling them to be, unless somebody stands up and teaches them some personal responsibility, like Pops. You know, and I thought that was, I mean, really beautiful that he's that one that he was going down that road and somebody helped save him, so he's there to save somebody else, and passing that on. And the idea of just, you live and die by your choices. Your nurture might be there, but you still live and die by the choices that you make, you know. And I love that he says to Luke, you know, boys run, men stand. And he's really the one who helps format and Luke and give him the motivation, obviously, his death, to come out and say, it's got to be me to stop these people. Like, and I thought, I just think that's so cool. And I just love the way that it, you know, it's not sugarcoating anything about society or the situations that we have, like in inner cities. But also being realistic too, like there's a lot more that goes into this than just like, people being poor and bad choices and everything. It's everything together, you know, it's not just one thing. And that complexity means that you can't just disregard people. And I think that's what I love about the series, is that it does a great job of giving a face to a lot of people that a lot of people in America might not really interact with all that much, and showing that it's a lot more complex than just, you know, well, they made bad choices. That's not all it is. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, and Mariah is definitely one that falls into that bucket too. I mean, she has the family issues that Cottonmouth had, but a little different experiences in her path, in her past, which has created her to take her revenge onto Cottonmouth. I thought her character became very more complex than what we saw in the beginning. I mean, she holds political office. She's playing politics, but in the beginning of the series, to me, she felt she knew that her cousin's in the wrong and he's doing wrong things, and she's kind of helping him, but trying to help him move forward. But as long as he pays her back, but when he's going too far, she's like, you got to quit this. You got to, you know, you got to make things right again and play things right. But as things go on in this series, she gets just as bad, if not worse, than him. And by the way, she's played by Alfred Woodward, who played Lily in Star Trek First Contact. I love this actress. She's great. I was so happy to see her in this series. I had to throw the Star Trek thing in there for Michael.
Well, I mean, I'm glad you did, because it's fantastic. And I think this is a great time to talk about all the villains with Mariah and Cottonmouth and Shades and Diamondback. I mean, because on a whole, really rich characters. Like, the villains are just as interesting as Luke Cage, for the most part, which is makes for a fantastic show.
Yeah, one thing I will say, I guess I'm going to be the odd man out on this one, but I didn't actually care for Mariah. Her character, I didn't believe in the end where all of a sudden she's leading everything. I'm like, no, she's really been a pawn this entire time. And for me to believe now that she's in charge is just a stretch, I think. On top of that, I didn't think the actress was very good. I just, a lot of her facial expressions just weren't very believable. I just didn't feel like she was very committed when she was trying to do stuff. You know, in particular, when she was supposed to be freaking out and killed Cottonmouth, it just seems like she was just screaming lines rather than actually feeling rage. Maybe I'm alone in that, but I was just like, it just doesn't work for me.
No, I wouldn't say you're alone. As much as I love this actress, this wasn't the best part that I've seen her do. So I remember being a little disappointed in her performance. I don't want to say it was a bad performance, but I've seen her do so much better. So I was a little disappointed that I wasn't blown away from her like I am in other roles.
I liked her switch. Like, it's almost as if the beast finally came out. You know, that she has been holding the beast at bay for so long in her life, and everything that she was fighting to never be, it explodes out of her, obviously. And it does so in a very violent fashion as, you know, she kills her cousin. And I thought that that turn was I thought she played that fantastically. I can understand, you maybe not liking some of the line deliveries, because she does kind of do a little bit of an Al Pacino thing where she'll yell her lines a bit. But I thought that she was a complex and fascinating character to continue to watch. And she is just kind of maniacally evil by the end, you know. And I thought I enjoyed watching that switch as well, because whereas, you know, you thought Cottonmouth was bad, but Mariah's like 20 times worse, and you didn't realize it until, you know, by I guess the last third of the season. And I thought that was just a nice switch you may not have really seen coming. I mean, I when she threw him out the window, I didn't see that one coming, honestly.
Yeah, that was a big surprise, and that's probably one of the better scenes that I've liked in the whole series, because it was such a shock, and that she, you know, really not just pushed him out of the window, but then she just beat him with a mic stand, just beat him to death. And then Shades walks in, and he's like, hey, great job, baby. That's good. That's good. I'm like, okay, I'm loving this. I mean, that whole scene there with these three characters played so well. And of course, I'm sure we're going to talk more about Shades, but I mean, he's such a great character. But I will say that as I'm watching, after that episode, it kind of went downhill for me. And then it came back up a little later. But that episode is probably my favorite of the 13.
I really like Shades. I wish we kind of knew more about that guy. He's the guy I feel like we know the least about by the end, and I still really want to know more. He's really good. I liked the actor playing him, and this is one of those things, like, I can't wait to see where him and Mariah go next in Luke Cage season 2, whenever that comes out. Because that's going to be fascinating, because, you know, they're setting up a season, I think, for Luke that, you know, it can't always just be about him having strong men to beat up. And I am very interested to see how they play all of that. So to me, that's just fascinating stuff. So I thought he was just great.
Yeah, I think the main thing with Shades is that I think what works for him is his mystery. I think if we got like some backstory on him and stuff, then it'd be like, oh, okay, well, he's just a regular person now. But I liked how he kind of felt. A lot of times, I would sort of underestimate him, and that led to probably one of the biggest surprises to me in the entire show, which was when he ended up, Diamondback tried to have him assassinated, and he killed everybody, because I didn't see it coming. I thought, man, they're really drawing this out, but, you know, just the whole time, it just looks like he's fighting and fighting to, you know, to no avail. And then just last minute, he pulls the gun and shoots the guys. And you're like, whoa, you know, like, I didn't see that coming. I thought he was dead. So that was a huge surprise to me.
Yeah, I love that scene, too. That because when that scene happened, and he's in the elevator and they, you know, trying to choke him to death. I was like, no, I love Cottonmouth. And now this is my next favorite character. Now he's going to get killed. And when he turned it around on them and he got them back, I was like, yes, I was all like, definitely for that. But Shades was definitely one of these characters that, you know, I thought he was pretty cool in the beginning, but as the series progressed, he just became more and more interesting. He's almost, and you're right, Matt, he should be still mysterious, because I think that's what makes him interesting. He's like the Boba Fett, you know, from Star Wars. You know, we don't want to know too much about Boba Fett, because that's what's cool about him. And Shades, you know, his armor are those are the shades. It's the sunglasses, man, you know? And so if a second season comes for this series, I definitely want him to be the main villain, along with Mariah, because she's got to be there with him. But let's just say he's leading the charge.
And that's one of the things that I felt like, you know, I thought that Diamondback was just always going to be the guy that they referenced in this series, and that in season two, he would come in and be the villain. You know, I honestly felt like you could probably have had Cottonmouth, Mariah, and Shades be the main villains and have everything happen that happened without Diamondback being the main guy and have him come in season two. I'm sure that they have a whole other plan because of the Defenders and all that stuff, but it just seemed like you didn't have to have Diamondback because you already had really compelling villains, and maybe it would have been more interesting to have Diamondback come in with all of the history and do like maybe flashback episodes, you know, like kind of like Arrow style where they do the flashbacks to the island. So you're kind of getting the concurrent stories of what happened to Carl Lucas and which is Luke Cage's other name. We haven't used it on the show yet, but so him and Stryker, Willis Stryker, to have that mean more so it didn't feel so melodramatic and we saw more of the what happened to them. Because I liked their flashbacks that they gave us, but I felt like if maybe that had been more a part of like a season two, it might have meant something more. But, you know, in the end, you needed, I guess they wanted Luke Cage to really give somebody a beatdown, you know, a cage match, to say. And I got to ask you this, okay. Why are superheroes so dumb sometimes? Like, Luke Cage can tell he's wearing a suit, right, that has a pack on its back. Why wouldn't you just beat the heck out of that pack?
I said the same thing. Because he even, like, eyes it at one point, and I'm like, yeah,
yes.
Go over there and punch it.
Yes.
And he's like, nah, I'm going to wear him down. I'm like, all right, Luke, whatever. Whatever you say, man.
Yep, I was thinking the same thing, because they even put a camera zoom in, you know, right on that, and should the pack go out and come back on, it's like, oh, okay, that's what Luke knows what the kryptonite is against his villain. He's going to take advantage of it and didn't do it.
Well, and that's what bothered me about the whole thing is that my wife and I are just sitting there watching it, and we're like, just hit the pack, dude. Just hit the pack. I mean, this is so simple, like, just hit the pack. And I mean, I know it's more poetic the way that Luke does it, but I mean, it just didn't make any sense. I mean, narratively, it's works better what Luke does, but just actual like logic, just hit the pack.
Yeah, I think they probably could have, because they had some time in that fight. They could have tried to show something where, you know, maybe it's made of vibranium or something and he can't damage the pack or something like that. You know, just a little something so that you can actually play out that narrative.
I mean, it gave it, you needed something to have. There's no way that anybody's going to be able to stand up to Luke Cage unless he has something special. Interesting that, you know, Hammer Tech is the way that he does it from a Marvel movie that most people kind of forget. Iron Man 2. So
I'll never forget that dancing, man.
Oh gosh. No, I think what was really interesting was the villains for the most part. I think, you know, Cottonmouth, Mariah, Shades, really strong stuff in the season, and I think that was really helpful. And it's where for me, you know, The pacing of this season, I think, was much better than what we got in Jessica Jones, because Jessica Jones really peaks at the middle of the show, and then it just kind of, like, never gets back up to that level, and by the time you get to the end, you're like, Whereas Luke Cage just has that continual build-up till you get to the end, and the biggest thing is watching the resolution to all the different storylines, and so I was really glad that they didn't have that mistake again, because it ended up working a lot better. And it was really interesting because, again, this show is so timely with the idea of the way in which the characters create narratives and use the media to craft those. I mean, we're getting police dash cam videos, you know, being shown, only getting a piece of the story, creating a false narrative, creating chaos and fear. I mean, it felt like you just were watching, you know, CNN or something, watching this show, because so much of this felt like everything we've been watching, you know, for the last few years in America.
Yeah, for sure. And from what I had actually heard on that, some of that was actually sort of coincidental. You know, they started working on this a few years ago. Obviously, the main thing that you can kind of see, or the main connection you can sort of see, is back to Trayvon Martin. And that's where kind of a lot of it stems from. But then as they sort of start crafting things, it starts to sort of be that reality imitating art type of deal. So a lot of it, like the dash cam video, like they didn't have the ability to put that in, really. I mean, you know, when you actually look at how ahead you've got to be with production and stuff, that just was sort of coincidence.
Yeah, it's interesting that they actually did that before what we're saying about has been more prominent in the news. I'm just surprised they didn't have, you know, Mariah be Hillary or Trump in there to also get some political things going. But no, it was interesting to see that. There was just a lot of things in there that I think that I'm glad they didn't play up too much the news angle. I mean, there was some of that. It was showing the media involved and how the media can be manipulated by politicians and even really by the police and the citizens. But I guess I'm just a little burnt out right now on the media that I'm glad the show didn't spend too much time on that.
Well, and what I liked is it wasn't so much them focusing like that on what you're saying, but it's more of the way in which especially Mariah is able to almost in a Palpatine way, like she uses the media to craft a narrative to create fear and chaos against and war against the wrong people so that she can slowly overtake the system. She can slowly work her way back into the politics and everything. And it just, I really thought that was fascinating, the way that they were showing that happen, that, you know, that's the way things work. You just take bits and pieces of information and you craft a narrative that sounds true enough, but it isn't. And I thought that was really fascinating because, you know, they're making up stories before all the facts are in. And so people then in those, they're just assuming things about others, like because they're the police or because they're black. And they play that really well. And what I liked is I thought the show did a very fair job of covering seeing those different biases on all sides. I was really pleased with the show for that reason. Like you said, Bruce, I'm kind of tired of that the media and the way it portrays things. And what I loved here is that it was just having an honest conversation about where we are and what things really look like. And I thought they were doing a great job. And to me, the thing that really rang true is Misty when she said, "The only thing that matters is the truth." I thought that was awesome.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we haven't even brought up Misty yet. What did y'all think of her?
I like her. I mean, she was a strong character. She's probably the character out of everyone here that has their act together. There was a part where she was kind of having a breakdown, but she's recovered from it. And then she kind of had another breakdown, but only because she's right and everybody else is wrong. And so it's frustrating when you know the truth and nobody's believing in it, or they know the truth and she knows they know the truth. But, you know, like she said, you know, the system is broke. They're letting bad people walk because of, you know, rules and regulations and stuff. And we know what's right, but we can't hold to those ideals because the system is broken, doesn't let us keep these people locked up. It doesn't give us a chance to throw them in behind bars and never let them out again. And so she had a lot of passion. She had a lot of great chemistry with Luke Cage and the other characters. And she was definitely a very strong woman, detective, great character. She could hold her own series.
It's funny you say that. because she's actually from the comics as well. And she's actually been in the Heroes for Hire and the Defenders, and then most notably She's one of the two members of the Daughters of the Dragon, her and Colleen Wing. If you notice at the very last episode when Claire, the night nurse, I can't think of the actress's name right now, and I really hate myself for it because she's beautiful. Rosario Dawson. When she pulls the little thing off the flyer and it says like Colleen Wing's martial arts, that is Misty's partner. So that was sort of like a little nod there. So
yeah, I thought that was a little odd when she tore the little paper. I'm like, okay, I guess she's going to take martial arts. What's the point of that? But now I know there's a connection.
Yeah, it's, and then also that's Colleen is their connection to Danny Rand as well, which we know is coming in the Iron Fist show.
I liked her a lot. I loved her. Like, just, I'm ballsy, spunky, Brooklyn, you know, she is tough as nails, and I thought she was fantastic. I thought the actress was phenomenal in the role, and I really liked her portrayal, and I'm really looking forward to seeing her be more involved, especially now, you know, with the way the show ends. It's going to be very interesting to see how they, you know, get Luke back for the Defenders and everything like that. And so my guess is that Luke Cage season 2 probably won't have to deal with some of that stuff because they're going to have to pull him out of prison somehow or get him off, you know, like free, but so he can be a part of the Defenders, because that's coming up probably before Luke Cage season 2. But yeah, Misty was, I really enjoyed any time that she was on screen, and I just felt like the actress really nailed that tough-as-nails detective who knows her city, cares about her city, is so good at her job. She could be doing, like, FBI, CIA-type work, probably, but she's dedicated to making sure that the place that she's from is as safe as it can be, and I just really liked that, and, you know, I thought it was great to show a cop in this whole thing in such a great light. And so I thought that was a really nice thing to see in this show, that there can be great cops and they can also be great African-American cops. You know, I thought that was really a wonderful thing to have happen throughout this whole show. So I really, really liked her. Which leads me to ask you guys, I love that Claire keeps showing up in all these shows, but man, I'll be honest, I love her relationship with Luke Cage. Claire and Luke Cage for life. They are awesome together.
I'm with you 100%. Their back and forth is so good. You know, the first that I really remember it being great was when, you know, there he is finally shot for the first time, you know, possibly going to die because of his situation. And she has to pull out the sonar thing, and she's rubbing on him, and he just goes, "Is it a boy or a girl?"
Yeah, I forgot about that one. That was funny. And then also, Misty at one point makes a comment to the two of them, "You guys talk like a married couple." And I think that just shows that relationship that they have. And when Claire first showed up on screen, you know, I'm very familiar with this actress, and it took me a moment to remember, she was in Daredevil. Yeah, she played this character, and I looked up later, and I saw what she was also in Jessica Jones. Is that right? So I like how she's carrying over, but she definitely fits in really well with Luke Cage, and I'm going to ship them. So, you know, they should be together, put them together. Hopefully, if there is a second season, do we even know if there's a second season? Because I'd like to see them together again. I don't know if that's been announced yet.
They haven't announced Luke Cage season 2 because they're doing Iron Fist and then the Defenders. So I think they're working on Jessica Jones season 2 and I guess Daredevil season 3 in the works. So they've got a lot going on, but I would hope that they would do Luke Cage season 2 because I really do want to see it. And yeah, I want Claire and Luke to finally get some coffee, you know what I'm saying? So, because I hear the Puerto Rican blend, some strong stuff. So, Yeah. Oh gosh. I now that leads me to a mistake in this show that bothered my wife and I so much. When they go to see Noah Bernstein, the doctor from Seagate, who had given Luke his powers, they only take the shrapnel out of his shoulder. They never take the shrapnel or even mention that he has shrapnel anymore in his stomach. And then later on, he lifts up his shirt to Claire to say, oh, look, I'm okay. Like, it's a huge blunder in the show that when they're trying to save his life and they're counting it down, they're only pulling the shrapnel out of his shoulder and not his original wound in his stomach. And then they re-reference that later on. It's just, it was my wife and I was like, are you serious? Like, his first shot was in the stomach.
Yeah. Wait, okay, so when he got shot in the stomach, didn't they say it could move up to his head? Didn't there was something like that, like the pieces could get into his neck or something, like if it could move around?
No, they were just saying that his body, because of the way his cells were structured, were pushing the shrapnel deeper into his organs, and that's why they needed to get them out.
Yeah. Okay, so it pushed it so far in that it pushed it up towards his shoulder.
No, because he got shot in the shoulder.
They took both pieces
out. He just got shot in the shoulder. That's what happened.
How convenient. They both, all the shrapnel ended up in one location.
They're magnetic. They kind of attracted to each other and all stuck together.
Okay, yeah.
Well, anyway, I got to say, Luke was pretty attractive.
Yeah. Oh, it just bothered me. The thing I really like about Luke Cage, and what really I think made this so successful to me was just Luke himself. And I think that the actor is just phenomenal in the role. But I think his portrayal of the character and the way that he does feel like this normal guy with a corny sense of humor. He's got a lot of great funny one-liners in here. But it's not forced, you know? It doesn't feel... When you watch some of the Marvel movies, you really feel like the humor's kind of like we're just looking for the one-liner every 2 seconds. But here, it just feels very natural to the character and to the situation, and I think it's fantastic. And I really have to say that resting on the shoulders of Luke Cage in this series works perfectly. And it's just lucky that the character is written well enough and portrayed well enough so that he can carry the whole series. And everybody else around him is just shining as well. And to me, for some of the little sins that we kind of talked about with some of the characters or the mistake about the shrapnel, stuff like that, I think this is just a really, really well done season of Netflix Marvel. So I'm really glad that I feel like they've learned from some of the mistakes from some of the other seasons that they've done. And Luke Cage feels like the culmination of just a lot of hard work. And I think this is 4.5 out of 5 wrecked pop shops. So, because they just wreck that shop all the time. It's bad. So I don't know. What do you think, Michael? What were some of your favorite things, and what do you think you might rate Luke Cage?
I'm so mad at myself because I'm not a very good morning person, but I meant, knowing that I was going to do this today, I meant to put on my Wu-Tang shirt today. I thought when he was walking, you know, he puts the earbuds in and they're playing Bring the Ruckus, and he's just like walking through getting shot up and everything. I was like, yes, because that's... I mean, like, that song has been my workout song before. You know, I love Wu-Tang Clan, and it's such a pumped song. And then, of course, he actually meets Method Man later, and I just loved that. Really got to geek out there. One thing that is kind of, I don't really hold against them, but I was like, you jerks. They sort of punked some of the comic readers, because Misty gets shot in her right arm, and so I'm going, ah, and they're like, no, it's fine, it's gonna heal. But Misty in the comics actually has a robotic right arm, so I was thinking, I'm like, that's what they're gonna do, that's how they're gonna give her the arm. But no, they were just playing us. So I guess if I were going to rate it, I would probably give it 4 cups of Cuban coffee.
Oh, spicy. What about you, Bruce?
So Luke Cage, I really don't feel like we gave this character a lot of justice on the show. I felt like we focused a lot on, especially on the villains, but we did say some good things, and Mike Coulter, who played the character, did a great job. He's definitely a Boy Scout. He's had a really crappy life outside of his childhood. You know, he sounded like his childhood was okay, but you know, being thrown in jail for a crime he didn't commit. And he's not really taking revenge. He's still a good guy, you know? He's always, you know, just looking forward and doing the right thing. And with that kind of strength that he got, he could have really gone bad and taken revenge on the police and everybody. But he's got a really good head on his shoulder. So I love the character, and I love that when he did get out of jail, and I guess he broke out of jail in a sense, but when he did, he was wearing, you know, a yellow shirt, and he had the headband on from when they were, you know, put him in the tank or whatever that gave him his super strength, because that's the character he looked like in the original comics and stuff. So that was a really cool call out. And my favorite scene with him also was, I think it was like the last two episodes or something, when he goes into like the shop there, the convenience store or whatever, and he just taps these guys are holding it up, he just taps them on the head and they just pass out. I mean, that's the strength he has. He just, you know, bloop, takes a little tap on the head and boom, they're out. So I like the show a lot. Like I said earlier, I thought it was going well until Cottonmouth died, and then it got a little weird to me and I started to lose interest, and then I got interested in again. It almost felt like two seasons. Like there's two parts to this, and I like part one actually better than part two. But outside of that, I would say if haircuts were $10, I'm going to pay $8.
I like it. That's awesome. Well, I mean, there's so much more that, I mean, when you talk about a TV show or a Netflix show, there's so much that you can talk about. I mean, there's just the show is just rife for conversation. And so I hope that you'll join us over on the Babel Conference to talk about it with us, or, of course, send in your emails at trek.fm/contact. Would love to just hear what people thought about Luke Cage, and I hope everybody enjoys it. I mean, before we go. So if you were going to rank Michael, I think you've seen all of the shows that Netflix has done, and so I know Bruce hasn't yet, but what would be your rankings of the shows? Where would you put them that we've had so far?
Ooh, that's really tough, mostly just because Daredevil's had two seasons.
Yeah, it's my job to ask the tough questions.
I think I'm going to put Daredevil at the top still, but I think it also has an unfair advantage. But then I would go Luke Cage and then Jessica Jones.
It's so funny because I'm Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and then Daredevil season 2. That's where I place them as well. So, man, who knew that Michael and I had so much in common? That's fantastic. Well, guys, so glad we got to talk about Luke Cage. And of course, really want to thank our associate producers here through Patreon, Ken Tripp, Davis Grayson, and Norman Lau, for supporting the show and making sure that all the content here through Trek FM keeps coming to you each and every week. Well, we are a listener-supported network, and we definitely need your help to make sure that all the shows can keep coming to you. And so go over to patreon.com/trekfm, and you can see how you can be part of the team. Every tiny little bit helps, honestly. So go to patreon.com/trekfm and sign up today. Michael, it has been fantastic to have you in the 602 Club tonight, and really appreciate you joining us here to talk about Luke Cage, but let everybody know where they can find you online, and I think you might have a podcast of your own that people might be interested in.
Yeah, bud, I really appreciate you having me on. I am over on the Star Wars Report Network, if you're familiar with them. It's over at starwarsreport.com. And then it's Cloud City Casino is my podcast. And you can find it over there or just on pretty much any of the podcatchers.
Awesome. And if people wanted to maybe catch up with you on Twitter, do you have a Twitter presence or Facebook or anything like that where people can shout out at you?
Yeah. So it's just Cloud City Casino on those. Or then I also have my personal, which is just Morris Isley.
Nice. Bruce, man, always good to have you back here in the 602 Club. Hope we treated you well tonight with, something good from Ruby. But let everybody know where you are so they can holler out at you.
Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Admiral_Rex. And you can also find me here on Trek FM on Literary Treks with Matthew, yourself, and Dan Gunther. And I'm occasionally on the Star Wars Report podcast, as Michael was mentioning Star Wars Report. And if you listen to some early episodes of Cloud City Casino, you'll hear me on there with Michael. Going, like, I don't know, what was those? Like, episodes 11 through 30 or something
like that. Yeah, somewhere in there. Right before you couldn't pay your debts and ended up getting put in carbon freeze from a bounty hunter.
Yes, I've been in carbon freeze ever since.
That's what that smell is.
And I'm so glad we could be on here, all three of us together, because I've been on shows but never together with the two of you.
Bruce,
so it's
I was
really
on
cool
Cloud City Casino with you, where we talked about Hallmark ornaments.
You were?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Jeez,
we did.
Man, I'm so glad. I'm so... okay.
What episode was that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, goodness.
Yes, that was about a year
ago. It was about a year ago. So, anyway, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network doing The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Deep Space Nine. And, Bruce, you already mentioned Literary Treks where people can find us. But, of course, I'm also over on thenerdparty.com. You can find my show that I do with John Mills called Aggressive Negotiations. We just enjoy talking about a great new Star Wars topic each week. It's a lot of fun. So check us out on thenerdparty.com or, of course, on iTunes. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And y'all come back now, you hear?